Today on the Rise of the Challenge podcast.
I've only started doing that in the last couple of years, and a lot more things have happened in a more positive direction for me and my company and my relationship I'm in now. Because who I am, I know who Braden is, but who Jet Black was in the adult industry is very different to who I am in the everyday. Same as charismatic as the drag persona of mine. But the identity process of being a sex worker and experiencing people's lives and meeting people from different backgrounds and different age brackets.
Welcome to the Rise to the Challenge podcast. Joined today, he's a performer, entertainer, entrepreneur, and CEO and founder. It's Braden Reese. How are you doing today, Braden?
I'm very well, Alex. Thanks for having me on the show. It's good to be here, and I'm digging the lighting in the background.
Well, thank you. We are so excited to have you on the show to talk about your rise to the challenge. What we like to do with all of our guests is go right to the beginning. Talk about where you're from and what you like doing growing up.
Sure. So I'm from Sydney, Australia. God, where do I start? What I like doing is performing. I like challenging the status quo. It's kind of what got me my start in my business and my career. I am an entertainer at heart, although it's not something I do every day. I do love to travel. Last year, I spent quite a bit of time in the Maldives in Europe. Next year, we're jumping on a Virgin Voyages cruise, which I'm really excited about, to zip around Australia to all the other states I haven't seen. Considering I've grown up here, you'd think I would have been around the country, but I haven't. Australia is quite large. So it's good to kind of zip around in the boat on that on its way out to Singapore, which I have been to before and I absolutely love. So yes, I'm very much a traveler at heart. Outside personal life, it's definitely the occasional gig as a entertainer, which I'm sure you'll ask me about. But other than that, my main gig and what I really love doing is helping people thrive in business and being authentic to themselves, because that's ultimately what got me where I am, is being very blunt, very honest, and very true to myself. That's a little bit about me.
I'm jealous you said the Maldives, because that's like my bucket list item on where
you have to go.
Destination is that place.
It's seriously an amazing place. Like I I'm somebody that hates the water. I hate the sun. I hate the beach. And my partner was like, you know what? There's this really good deal on luxury escapes. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he's like, do you want to go? And I'm like, okay, cool. Let's go. Why not? It was actually a really killer deal. My partner had been to Bora Bora before, and apparently that was really expensive. Several tens of thousands of dollars for 2 weeks. Whereas the Maldives for two people was just shy of 10 grand. And where we stayed was incredible. And I actually fell in love with the water and swimming and snorkeling, and like I was in the water every day, and I honestly thought I would hate it. I'm like, oh no, we'll go to Singapore, we start the trip there, then we end up in the Maldives, and then we come back home to Australia, and I'm like, yeah, I'm probably gonna either love it or hate the Maldives. And I hate the beaches in Australia because the sand's really hot, the water's really salty. But in the Maldives, the water is really not salty at all, and the sand is like flour and it's coral. Like broken down coral sand. So it actually doesn't burn your feet, which is something I learned. So it's really pleasant. It's very warm. Gotta go. That's a bit of a plug for the Maldives. Plenty of hotels to choose from. They're not all great, but the one that we stayed at was lovely. So yeah, add it to your bucket list. Keep it on the bucket list. Save your pennies and jump on a plane and check it out.
You talked about performing. When did you find that first itch to perform or be exposed and experience it?
So, look, this is going back to primary school, really. For me, this is like elementary school. So I was always had a passion for music, and my parents used to take me to circus shows and live theater and music theater shows, and I always was like, oh, I want to be on the stage one day, but didn't really know how to get there. So for me, in the early phases, it was being part of school productions and pretty much saying yes to everything and trying everything. And I'm still very much like that today. I don't shit on an idea unless I've tried it out myself and worked out I hate it. I like to experience things. So I had the option to pick up a clarinet I went to school one day. This is like year three or year four in elementary, and I went to school, and they had this music teacher turn up, and they were like, "Oh, pick an instrument." I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And so, unbeknownst to my parents, I picked up a clarinet at school, and then came home with this little black box. And mum was like, "What's that?" And I'm like, "It's a clarinet." She goes, "You can't play an instrument." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, I'm going to learn and try." That was in primary school, and very quickly from then on, I very quickly picked up reading music, writing music, how to play it. And then I was like, well, what else can I do in this creative space? And so it went from clarinet to singing, because if I could follow the notes on music, then maybe if I followed the notes vocally, I could, sing as well. So it just kind of gradually evolved from there, because I loved performing and being on the stage. And I liked the feeling I got being on stage in the spotlight, but also being part of ensembles. So yeah, it was very early on in the piece, but fast track to now. And it's very different. I don't play the clarinet anymore. It's sadly somewhere in storage in the box, probably with mold growing on several of the wooden reeds, which is quite sad. But it was the start of my music career as a performer. And then it became drag, as a drag queen, which was more theatrical. It was the cabaret and the arts and the drama studies I did in secondary, which was through high school, year 11 and 12, your penultimate 2 years of finishing. And I ended up taking everything I learned in music and drama and fusing it together. And then thought, well, I'm a gay guy, and in that world, there is drag queens. And I thought, well, give it a go. And yeah, lo and behold, the drag career followed. So yeah, there's a lot more behind the scenes on how I got there, if you want to ask that question. But it's probably it's very taboo left of field topic.
Well, starting out, the music aspect, there's always something that people learn about themselves. It always brings out a skill set in them that they always take in other areas. As I grew up in a band, playing in a band, played the French horn. So similar to knowing that you're playing the clarinet, the music kind of world, what is something that you learned about yourself playing music or even on stage that has either helped you where you are in the business world or even as a drag queen? Because there's some skills that can be incorporated in all aspects.
It's a good question. I'm going to take the left of field approach in answering that question. This is where I kind of get to be deep and meaningful, but I guess what reigns true for me is living authentically. Drag is definitely part of the profession and career, or my many personas that I've had throughout my career in business, but getting there was not straightforward. It wasn't like, oh, I went to school, loved music, and then became a drag queen. There's a bit of a connection between the two. But to get into the school I went to was a religious high school, and I had the choice to go to a religious private school where there was a lot more opportunity, or go to a state school that was local government funded and, have lesser opportunities. So my parents were like, no, we'll send you to the private school because we like the look of it. It's got a lot of opportunity. Go there. To get into that school, I had to get a signature from a local minister to get into the school. We weren't avid churchgoers at that time, but to get into the school, I had to go to church. So we went to church. I was still dabbling with singing and clarinet and stuff. So I immersed myself in the music world of the Pentecostal faith in Australia, as an Anglican back then. So in that process of going to church and to get into the high school, got in, obviously music and arts and drama stayed in school, and I became better at it. But in the church world, I learned very quickly that there was a part of me that was being suppressed, and that was being part of a community that I found to be, and this is just my experience. I'm not saying that all communities and faiths are like this, but the church community I was part of was incredibly judgmental, and incredibly shrouded with bigotry. So a lot of closed-mindedness. And so when I was growing up, I had people saying that if you have feelings towards people of the same sex, then potentially you don't fit in here. It's the devil. It's challenging you. You need to get out of the church. You don't fit in here. Alongside that, I was working as a youth minister in the church, thinking that if I prayed hard enough, that this part of me that the church community was saying was so wrong, about who I was as an individual would just fuck off, and it would go away, and it was the devil. And I thought if I stayed in the church, did the right thing, faith, everything, immersed myself in religion and practiced what I preached, it would just fade away. It didn't fade away. It actually chewed away at me because I was very passionate about music and theater, and I did that on stage outside the church. I was in bands and in the music ensembles in the church, and the community was telling me, we don't want you here, even though I was preaching faith to young people. The turning point in that part for me to getting to the drag side of things, where it got a lot more fun, was the fact that in the church community, I was given a choice to either stay or go because they didn't want me there because I identified as a gay male. That was quite confronting because I had helped so many young people embrace their sexuality and their identity and their authenticity because they were so comfortable coming and talking to me that they just felt that they could tell me things that they weren't comfortable telling their parents. And a lot of their parents were pastors, ministers, and I, as a youth works leader, were in a position of education and helping them. And I just told them, be yourself. And they did that. And it was okay for them to be themselves, but it wasn't okay for me to be me, even though I was doing God's work. So I left the church. And from that experience, making that decision to leave, I had a bit of an identity crisis. I didn't know where I fit in. So I pretty much threw myself into the queer community of Sydney, Australia, where the Mardi Gras is held. It was a very sink or swim experience. And I met a lot of people really quickly, nightclub managers, underground characters, I mean, underworld characters, so to speak, a lot of red light district people. And I eventually ran into a few people that were drag performers, and I was very fascinated about how they could be creatively open about their performance and their makeup and their music and their styling. And I just wanted to be part of that because I loved the theatrical side of things. And so I took my passion for music and theatre in one way in the church community, left the church, and then gravitated towards somewhere where I was actually accepted. My creativity was liberated. I wasn't being judged, although the queer community is incredibly fickle and incredibly judgy. And drag queens like to read. If you watch RuPaul's Drag Race, reading is fundamental. But I found that the queer community was a lot more open to people that were different. And the church community I left was very much black and white. You're either this or you're out. So I found a place of belonging in the queer community, and drag was part of that journey. And so from that, performing in gay bars and stuff for drink vouchers early on in the piece very quickly became people asking me, can you do my corporate function? Can you do my wedding? Can you do my private party? And because I don't lip sync, I actually sing, I was able to command a higher price tag. And eventually, a few agents threw themselves at me, and I managed to get myself on telly for Australia's Got Talent, very similar to America's Got Talent. And that was an experience which opened up a lot more doors. And it was purely because I took that leap of faith in myself, not so much the faith that people were throwing at me saying, you must be this way, or you're fucked and you're going to hell, essentially. I went, no, I know that in myself, denying who I am and not being myself is the worst thing I could do. So I turned away the naysayers and focused on living my own truth, and so much more opportunities came from that. I just want to preface that my parents and my family are not part of that community that was judgmental of me. I'm quite fortunate to have family around me that does not judge who I am, what I've done, who I've done. And the things that I've done in my career, I'm very, very lucky to have parents that I can have open communication with and family that are there to champion me. A lot of people don't have that. But I just want to preface that they're not part of the problem that I left. They were part of the story for me to kind of learn and become educated and creative and have opportunities. But they always said, we just want you to be happy and successful. And wherever that takes you, as long as you're safe, happy, successful, That's the best we can ask for our child, and we'll love you no matter what. So I am very fortunate and grateful to have family like that. But there in life, as you grow up, you very quickly learn that you have chosen family and family you get brought up by. And my chosen family early on was the religious community. Wasn't a fit for me because I was definitely not a fit for them. So I hightailed it out of there and found my fit in the queer community. And yeah, the love and support from my family has not unwavered. So I'm just, yeah, very lucky. But the shift was, it's not the most conventional. It wasn't just love for music, liked doing makeup, and then became a drag queen. It was very much an identity process for me, and one where sometimes you've got to step outside your comfort zone to actually stop, think, reflect, and go, is this who I want to be? Or am I just doing this because people around me say that's what they want me to be? And that's the worst direction you can take in life. And drag is just one part of who I am and what I've done. But I love it because it's a creative outlet from the everyday. And seeing people's faces light up and shock factor when you do a reveal or you do a wedding and you celebrate marriage between either a woman and a woman or a man and a man or a straight couple. There's nothing better than to be part of those moments and entertain them and, make everyone happy and smile. That's why I love performing. It's why I've always loved to entertain. It's not so much, oh, look at me, I can sing, I can act, I can dance. It's very much, look at the people in the audience. They've come to see you and they want to feel something. They want to see something exciting and you're making them happy. That's what I love about performing. And what motivates me every day really is the opportunity that sometime around the corner, there might be that opportunity to jump on stage, whack a wig and a frock on and, be my alter ego, charismatic, but it's not something I do every day.
You talked about a big part of your journey has been identity. Was there, you talked about
Yeah.
how you had that one persona with being a drag queen, but you have that business side. Did it ever go in a different direction where it kind of maybe could have been nerve-wracking that you went into that industry, that area of business, that maybe the personas didn't match with each other, and you kind of had to keep both lives separate.
Yeah, there definitely was. So part of my career, and obviously going back to being part of the queer community, was the fact that I was very green or new to the queer community, and I didn't really know what it meant to be gay and what identity was for me. Drag was something that I gravitated towards because of theatre and my passion for music and art, but that wasn't me. Like I had met people that were in drag because they felt that that was their most authentic self, 24 hours, 7 days a week. And they were born a man, but they wanted to be transgender. So the only way they felt they could release that part of themselves was to get frocked up and go out. And that was them, their best versions of themselves that they were happy with. That's not why I did drag. I did drag from a theatrical genre. And then once the performance was over, that came off and it was still me, but I didn't know who I was. And so entering the queer community, I had met other people, and other people and other sub-sectors of the queer community I met were sex workers. And I this the one thing I learned, this is very taboo for some people, because people will be like, oh my God, he's talking about escorting. But for me and part of my career and my own personal identity, I found that sex workers and male escorts were very raw and honest about who they were, and they had such I guess self-belief in themselves to the point where they didn't give a fuck what people thought about them, and their resilience and their strength and their creativity, they just knew who they were. And you can go to a gay bar and you see a lot of people that would just whack on some glitter and a fishnet singlet and a pair of skinny jeans and go, well, look at me. And they're doing it for attention, but that's not, most of the time they're doing it because they want to fit in. They want people to accept them. They want people to go, oh, look at that shiny object over there. But what I found with the sex workers, although they're being objectified to some capacity in their profession, which I did do for 10 years as a sex worker, and I know that that's part of the profession. But the part I love the most is that they were just raw and real. about who they were, and they weren't trying to be anything other than who they were. And I saw a lot of people trying to be versions of themselves that really wasn't authentic to them. They were, oh, if I be this way, I'll get more attention. Whereas the sex workers I had met at the clubs as friends were realistically themselves, and that's what you see is what you get. And I loved that. So I gravitated towards them quite heavily because I wanted to know, how can you be so comfortably out there and not give a fuck what people think? Because I want that confidence in myself. And because I'd come from a church community where, you don't do that, you don't speak out of turn, you don't, like, there was a rule book there in the Christian faith. But when I moved into the queer community, I was like, oh my God, you can say anything. And it doesn't matter what you say. And if people get the shits of it, well, there's a door, off you go. So I learned very quickly to be confident and just speak my mind. That was a bit confronting, because I'd never been able to do that. I always knew I wanted to have the freedom to be my own boss, but I didn't necessarily think it would come from a place of being who I am. Like, I didn't think it would come from a place of sexuality, for one. But early on, to identify myself and understand my sexuality, I dived into escorting and did that quite successfully, unbeknownst to me. But I made a lot of money, had a lot of clients very quickly, and developed what I would say is a very thick skin, a hard exterior, which over the last 2 to 3 years, in the most recent 2 to 3 years, I've actually started to relax a lot more. Early on in the career as a sex worker, I had a very thick exterior. Like, you couldn't crack through. It was very much my way, highway, black and white. And I still follow that in business to some respect, but I was applying that to everything when I was younger, which was a mistake because I lost a lot of friendships. I lost a lot of connections. Networking wasn't really a thing for me because I had developed this hard shell, and very rarely would I let people in. I only started doing that last couple of years, and a lot more things have happened in a more positive direction for me and my company and my relationship I'm in now, because who I am, I know who Braden is, but who Jet Black was in the adult industry is very different to who I am in the everyday. Same as charismatic as the drag persona of mine. But the identity process of being a sex worker and experiencing people's lives and meeting people from different backgrounds and different age brackets and asking them, what does it mean to be queer to you? How do you fit in the community? What is your identity? How did you get there? What were the struggles you faced in the queer community at a younger age? Because as a sex worker, you don't get the guys you want to sleep with in reality. You're getting the clients that want you because they're either have a broken relationship or they lost a loved one, and they want an ability to have an option with somebody that will listen and care. But you, as a sex worker, if you were choosing to date someone, 9 times out of 10, the person you get as a client is not the person that you would want a long-term relationship with. So, people tend to think, oh, especially the queer community. I remember being judged a lot for being the gay sex worker. That was challenging because a lot of people would be on Grindr and they would, give it away for free. And I was the one making money off it. And apparently that was a problem. So even though I would say it wasn't a problem for me, but what I would put it down to is that people that I met in the queer community were very jealous of what I was doing. There was a lot of jealousy around it. And it wasn't people that I was dating. These were just people that were like, oh my God, you get paid for it. You're such a slut. And they would block you, or they wouldn't talk to you, or they wouldn't be friends with you. It's like, I don't understand why this is a problem for you. It's not like we're sleeping together. But it seemed to be an issue. It's quite unusual that that's a thing, considering how sexually overt the queer community can be during World Pride or Mardi Gras festivals. There is this unspoken underlying thing of, oh, you've slept with this person, so now there's this 1 degree separation between you, my friend, and my best friend. And there is a lot of that in the queer space in Sydney specifically. But I found the challenging thing for me as a sex worker in my early part of my career was the fact that being able to distance my personal life from working as a sex worker, that was quite a challenge because people had a perspective or an opinion about what it meant to be a sex worker versus what it actually is to be a sex worker. And so keeping that quiet and under wraps was always a challenge, but navigating it came down to choosing people to be in your life that genuinely care and want to support you and be part of your life as a friend or a partner, and not just saying yes to everybody. Like Facebook, you just add people for the sake of adding people, but do you really know everybody you've added on Facebook? So
No.
I was very guilty of that in the queer community. I was that guy that was like, oh yeah, I'll be your friend, I'll be your friend, and then they find out you're a sex worker and they're like completely MIA. So it made sense for me very early on to learn to choose my friendships carefully, and not just be open to everybody, because I very quickly learned that people that I said yes to that were friends that I thought were friends, it was a one-way direction, wasn't a balanced friendship. So, or people got to know me because they're like, oh, he's a sex worker, he's an easy catch, and I'll be able to sleep with him because he's my friend. I had a lot of people that thought they could do that, but then it's like, no, it's what I do for work. If you want to sleep with me, give me your fucking wallet or go on Grindr and find someone for free. So I very quickly learned, like I said, to put a line in the sand and go, these are the rules of how I will navigate friendships and connections. But it's something I had to learn to do because I had come from a place where everyone was there for everybody. Like the Christian faith is very much, supposedly, which it wasn't for me, but until I came out, it changed. But staying in the box and being what they wanted me to be, it was like everybody's happy and everyone's there to support each other. But when you leave sort of a religious context, it was very challenging because it was a different community with a different sort of social atmosphere. So that was the challenging thing for me, was switching from a faith-led community where it didn't accept me to a community that didn't care what I did and who I was, but the people within it all had different views and very different opinions on things. So navigating that was unique, but it definitely strengthened me as a person because I was able to learn who I was and who I wanted to be through my clients, through the people I met. And yeah, business has kind of evolved from that. So hopefully that answers the question. It's a long-winded answer, but it's only because for me, it's not something that people would understand unless they've been there. So I try and over-explain it because I think if I over-explain it, people will see it from a different lens rather than the lens of, oh, sex worker. Well, I'm going to tune out of this podcast. So if you're still listening, great. Because I've done my job in communicating that, yes, it's a profession. Yes, it's different. I'm not advocating on this podcast for you to go and become a hooker, but I'm definitely saying that don't knock it till you tried it, or at least understand it first before you pass by us. It was definitely an experience for me, and it has shaped me into who I am today. I'm not currently a sex worker. That chapter has closed for me. But my businesses were my escort profession springboarded off my career as a male escort. So, yeah.
You talked about a few things like the friendship aspect, where a lot of people probably are listening that have gone through the same situation with the one-way friendships. I know I've had that experience with one-way friendships. I hate it because you put all the effort in there and then you don't get it back, or that person thinks the same way. But even with your story from being a sex worker, as some people can't relate, you went through some challenging times that you had to go through to really learn a lot about yourself to get to where you are today. And I think a lot of people can relate where they've gone through their own challenging times. If it's trauma, a relationship, an accident, an injury, something that they've gone through that's challenging that maybe they didn't think that they were going to learn something about themselves, but they kind of needed to be where they are. And you talked to how that kind of experience, those 10 years, really springboarded where your career as an entrepreneur, a CEO, and founder to really help you grow. And I think that's so important. You took that risk in a way where it's an industry that is so judged about what you're doing.
It
And
is.
there's a lot of things that when people are in it, they really are like, okay, they're kind of creating their own business in a way. They're learning skills, they're learning life skills. It's not as negative
Yeah.
as it is because us in a society are only thinking about that negative aspect of it. Like, oh, you're having sex for money.
Yeah.
That's the only thing they care about. But you learned a lot more. And I think
Do.
even with
Yeah.
the drag queen world, it was such a industry that a lot of people did not know about and people judge. You look at it now and it's on major networks. It's a phenomenon at like restaurants. There's restaurants that are
Yeah.
specifically made for it, and it brings out a community that is just positive. Like people, you
And
could be a part of
it
it.
surprises me on
Yeah.
that, because in the States, like specifically certain states within the US have an issue with it. But I look at it very differently, and I've been following what's happening in America. And we're very lucky in Australia to not be in a position where Sydney doesn't do what Melbourne does, or like we don't have that sort of issue within the, definitely there is that issue within the adult industry, but within the entertainment space as a drag queen, it's not something that we have an issue with. Our whole country is pro marriage equality. Our whole country is open to theatre and entertainment. What may not be open to it is certain venues or certain venue managers, but as a state and as a country, we don't have state laws that say you can't do this or you can't be that. It's quite confronting to see what's happened over, I believe it's Texas, where they've done this approach in the US where if you're a drag queen, you don't exist or you can't do it or it's criminalized. Because I like to challenge people on this particular topic that if you're prepared to take your children to the circus, such as Cirque du Soleil from Canada, or your local circus, which has lions and tigers in it, or if you take your children to Disney on Ice or Disneyland, I don't understand how that's any different, because Elsa is not at Disneyland, Pocahontas is not Pocahontas, and Peter Pan is not Peter Pan at Disneyland. They are all people with makeup and costumes on, performing for your entertainment and your children. And not all drag queens are vulgar. There are drag queens out there, for example, like ones that I've seen in the States, like Lavoie, for example, who's European based but travels quite a bit on cruise ships. As a cabaret entertainer, family friendly oriented performer, can change the dynamic for an adult show and change the dynamic to a family friendly show. Not all drag queens are named after body parts or are going to swear in a show and offend people. I am not that sort of performer in drag. I am the glamorous, very different in drag. My persona is completely different, but I'm very brash as a guy. In drag, I'm way more fluffy and flamboyant and happy-go-lucky and very whimsical, like Disneyland. but there are drag queens that are very much red light district, hooker heels, and death drops, and not all queens are like that. So I find it quite bizarre in the US that people have chosen to attack that particular subculture without considering all elements and going, okay, well, if that person's wearing makeup and they've got heels on or they've got a costume on, well, then let's apply that to everything and take, and don't take, but suck all the fun out of the world. Because if you have an issue with someone wearing makeup, well, then I'm sorry, don't get your makeup done. Don't go and see women that work in hair salons. Everyone's wearing makeup to some capacity, whether it's moisturizer, hair product, lip liner, eyeliner. Like, if you're going to pick on people for what they're wearing and what they're doing, consider how far that actually extends. Because I think if you're going to cause an issue with that particular subsector of the queer community just because you don't like what they're doing, then have a look at what they're doing and wipe it out everywhere else. And then see how boring the world really is. So that's just my take on it, being a performer and a business person, but I find it quite comical in an underhanded way that the US in certain states has an issue with drag when it's literally theatre, music, art, performance. That is all it is. If you have a problem with that, don't take your kids to see Cirque du Soleil. There are boys dressed as girls, there are girls dressed as guys. They may be dressed as a fairy or an ant or a dragon in the Cirque du Soleil shows, but they are not dressed as a human. So, like, there is this polarized thing for me where I think that some people take things too far when it comes to overuse of power. But yeah, I think it's quite weird that certain things in the art profession get skewed to people's advantages and a lot of people's disadvantages, because drag's just meant to be fun. That's all it is for me. But it's unfortunate that people paint it, like, even with the adult industry, pick a negative lens and apply that to the whole thing. I really think that that's just a very closed-minded way to approach the world, because the world's not supposed to be black and white. If it was, we probably see in black and white like some animals do, but we see in color. So we can't suck the life and the color out of the world. We've got to make use of it and explore it and celebrate it.
We'll talk about a big moment you just went through a few days ago, but talk about the business side of Braden. When did you get to, what kind of industry did you take part in or get into? And what's been the biggest challenge you faced during that journey?
So initially it was, so I'll dial it back a little bit. So my career first off started when I was embracing my sexuality and all this sort of stuff, working as a sex worker on the side. My day job was actually working in the hotel sector. And I really was a people person at that point in time. But what I hated about it, as I learned more about myself, was being honest with myself and being me and working in hotels that were five-star properties. And they were amazing properties. And I still stay in a lot of the hotels that I've worked in and chains that I've worked as part of. But what I didn't like about it was that I couldn't be myself. I had to tone things down. I had to change who I was to satisfy the business. So I left the hospitality industry after quite a few years in it, where I climbed the ladder very quickly to become a general manager of one of a core hotel's massive five-star properties. And I two things. I hated that I couldn't be myself. The second thing was that I felt very restricted in what I could do as a manager. I couldn't change things. I couldn't make things better. I could only do what the bureaucracy of the hotel chain allowed me to do, and I felt very limited. But what I learned in my day job was that aspects of marketing and advertising and people's experience and creating opportunities and engaging people, I really love doing. So I left my job as a general manager in a five-star hotel on a really good salary to being a student again. And went back to uni and studied marketing and advertising. And what I loved about that was that I could be creative and strategic, and my skill sets were being used in a different way. And I didn't have to fake things. So when I came out of my degree in marketing and advertising and PR and a little bit of column A, column B, and C, because I've overeducated myself these days, but what I was able to do with what I learned was contact businesses and say, hey, I've noticed this. I'll do it for free. And if you get a result out of it, great. I get experience out of it. You get something out of it. Feel free to write me a check. That was my approach to building my business very earlier on, rather than just go work for an agency, which I had already been part of different companies, different businesses, and I hated not being myself. I started going, okay, well, this is who I am. This is who I know I am. If people don't want to work with me because I'm not the personality for them, then I'm probably going to get a lot of no's and a lot of phone hang-ups and a lot of rejected emails. But eventually I'll get somebody that says yes or gives me a chance. And I did. I managed to ring around hundreds, if not thousands, of businesses in different industries that I was passionate about, but didn't want to be in, but wanted to help them improve, and built a portfolio of small businesses and startups and medium-sized businesses in hospitality, retail, tourism, entertainment, coming from my drag side of things, right through to the adult sector. So then there were sex shops, again, retail, but adult pleasure product stores to online dating websites. And these were like very early on in the career. I didn't have a company. I didn't have websites. I just had me, my phone, and an email. But the sink and swim experience I had through all those different industries led to me learning things through some sort of crash course lens rather than using the piece of paper I had, because you don't learn much in it. You learn theoretical shit, but you don't learn how to actually do or implement anything in the real world. So my real world experience came from offering my services for free in marketing, not as a sex worker. That was always paid, but the marketing and PR stuff to learn and develop skills was free labor. And the sink and swim experiences I had there led to the launch of a company, because word of mouth spread about how good I was in certain areas. Very good at strategy, very good at PR. A lot of clients come to me for that now still, and for direct approaches to fixing things. But off the back of that 55 clients that I had long term, earlier on, ended up becoming something a lot bigger. So I eventually pivoted away from mainstream clients, because my passion wasn't fully there at that part of my career. So I was very more heavily involved in the adult space. So initially, it's kind of weird to explain, because I have a company that's set up as the parent company for what I have. But my first company, aside from myself as an independent, was Sweet Release Agency, which is only for the adult industry, because it was the industry that supported me. It was the community that accepted me. I had this sense of feeling like I owed an industry something that was so misjudged, so misunderstood, and didn't have access to the services that I had been educated in, marketing, advertising, PR, that they couldn't get from a mainstream firm. And I had these conversations with these businesses and these entertainers, and they were saying to me at that point, Jet, we can't just call the company that does Pepsi and Coca-Cola's marketing. When we ring them and email them and say, we want your help, they say no. And I'm like, I don't understand why they're saying no. Are you sure you spoke to the right person? Maybe you spoke to, because to me, I see products and services as products and services. That's it. I don't give a fuck what industry you're in. My job is to make your product and service successful. That's how I've always seen it. And maybe that's because I came from the adult space and I have a very liberal mind and I don't take shit from people, but I just didn't understand why, if you're a person in a profession that's designed to help people, why you wouldn't help them. So I rang around and did the phone calls and emails that all these clients had done, or at this point in time, my friends and peers had done, and got the same resistance. I got companies yelling at me over the phone. I had females that worked in businesses saying to me, oh, this is a extortionary industry and we can't be seen to support it. Or it was someone that was a feminist, which is quite funny, because a lot of female sex workers I know are very feminist and I love that. They're very pro-female empowerment. Yet the people outside the industry were saying this industry takes advantage of women. And I'm thinking the women that are in this industry chose to be in this industry. They make a lot more money than you do as an account manager in that marketing agency. So I don't know where your opinion's coming from. It's very skewed and misinformed. But a lot of the advice, like a lot of the pushback, was from people that didn't understand. And a lot of the agencies didn't understand or respect the industry. And once I worked that out for myself, I knew that I was in a position where I was educated, experienced, and personally involved in the adult industry to a point where I could help people. Because I just didn't understand why people that were marketers and advertisers and publicists didn't want to help them. That your job is to help people. Fucking do your job. So I said to my friends, I'll help you. Haven't really dabbled in this side of marketing, but I'm sure I can work that out, and switched on enough to work this out. And it was very different, and it is incredibly different and incredibly challenging to mainstream anything what people call mainstream, because the adult space has a lot of red tape. And what you can put on Facebook and Instagram, you can't put on TikTok and everywhere else for the adult space. So I had to learn all that very quickly and adapt everything that I had learned and experienced in quote unquote mainstream real world stuff, hospitality, retail, car dealers, blah, 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 and apply it to the adult space, which was different, but one that I was passionate about. So I learned very quickly how to make things work. And those 50 clients went from having no customers to a lot of customers in a very short period of time. One client of mine was just a massage service provider, independent guy advertising online. And he went from wanting to get more clients through the week because he only had like 5 or 10 clients a month to through digital ads and running his advertising and setting his business phones up and his email and his booking systems all up for him to make it easier for him. He went from having 5 clients a week to 15 clients a month to having 55 clients a week. He was able to put a freaking deposit down on a house. He bought himself an apartment. This is all within the first 6 to 12 months of helping him. And all his income was from this job as a massage person because he had come to me and said, all these companies aren't helping me. I don't know where to go. Can you help me? And so late at night at like 4 in the morning, I'm sitting here going through all this stuff, trying to pull it all together. And that was his result in the end. I've had nightclubs come to me and struggle getting people through the door because they didn't have loyalty programs in place, or their cover charge was too dear, or their alcohol was too expensive, or whatever. And I reformatted all that for them and ended up pulling a lot more people in. Rather than being open 2 days a week, they're open 5 days a week. So I was able to modify a lot of things in the from mainstream marketing, advertising, and PR process to the adult space. And 50 clients spoke to 50 other clients, and then it snowballed. And very quickly, Sleep Release Agency became an agency, not just me, where I now have a team of 20 people working behind the scenes and 6 people that work side by side with me that are industry professionals. And we've got tech nerds below them and working alongside me. But it went from a handful of clients to 5,000 clients internationally. So even though I'm based in Sydney, Australia, my company now, Sweet Release Agency, is global. And a lot of our clients are from US and Europe. It's weird when people hear that because they're like, well, you're based in Sydney. How does that work? Because the only thing that sets our industry apart is our time zone. And we've learned to work with that. Nothing really changes in the adult space other than technology and law, which we're across, which I'm now fast tracking to becoming across because I'm now in halfway through a law degree in, and I'm heading in the commercial direction. But I am learning all the legal stuff as I go. And we have law firms and accounting firms that work with us. But ideally, later on down the track, it'll all be integrated through Sweet Release. So we'll have our own lawyers, our own accountants. But at the moment, we've partnered with firms that keep us well informed. But yeah, that was the Sweet Release story. It literally started from me being the call boy that was in demand in Sydney to helping my friends try and make some more money for them. And Sweet Release just it grew legs and ran. And that was the first business for me where I was able to combine all of my passions for theatre and arts and marketing and advertising all into one thing. And make a positive difference in an industry that's so misjudged and misunderstood and I guess taken advantage of by the media. We see a lot of mainstream press paint a negative image on this industry. But at the end of the day, when I talk to other entrepreneurs and other businesses, or I talk to people in finance, they always say the things that people need is food, shelter, and sex. They're the three things that we as humans need. Sex ain't going anywhere. Food, we need that to survive. And we need a roof over our head. That sort of thing is never going to change. So it's something that we have to deal with if you don't like the adult industry. I'm sorry, it's never going anywhere. As humans, we are very sexual beings. We wouldn't be here if sex didn't happen. So, some mum and dad had sex to make me, and I'm pretty sure it happened for everybody else too. So someone did something sexually for you to be on this planet. So it's a thing that's there, and we have to accept it for what it is, but also understand it. So, Sweet Release is all about that. It's a brand I started to create a sweet release for businesses and entertainers being judged, being challenged by society, that they could be accepted. And it was my way of giving back to an industry that supported me. The shorter version of it is that that was first, but now it's nested under a mainstream marketing and PR company that I own called Axis Global. And that is all the clients that I worked with and still have today outside the adult space to get to where I am today. And these companies are things like Uber, Afterpay, Klarna, Tourism Australia. Like these are large businesses that these are some of the businesses that I picked the phone up to and said, I'll do it for free, that have led to where I am today in my business and my company. But to have 5,000 clients worldwide and a team that works with me and have an international client portfolio and see the success is ultimately a dream for me, because what I'm doing now in my profession is just helping people realize their full potential, but at the same time challenging the status quo, because I don't want people to copy and paste what everybody else is doing. It's nothing worse than when a business contacts me and says, oh, I like what they're doing, can we do the same? I'm like, no, and I hang the phone up. So it's very much, oh, that sounds nice, click click and dial tone. So I like people that come to me with an idea and they're genuinely passionate about their idea. And I want to help them make it a reality. And that's what I've done through Axis Global. It's what I've done through Sweet Release for the adult industry. And ultimately what I've done for myself. But the crux of it all is the fact that I want all my clients to be authentic. They need to be themselves. They need to be passionate about what they do. And to get ahead in life, you need to connect those two things together. It's like another drag reference, but RuPaul says, how can you love anybody else until you love yourself? It's very true, reigns true in business. If you don't know who you are, no one's going to fucking want to know you because they don't understand you. So it's very hard for them to resonate and connect with you because they're like, I don't understand this person. They don't know who they are. So it makes it uncomfortable. So you lose connections. But once you know who you are and who you want to be, if you can connect your passion and your purpose and who you are together, success follows. But behind the scenes of that is having family and friends and peers that champion you. And I'm fortunate to have that. And a lot of successful people out there, especially ones I met a couple of nights ago at the 40 Under 40 Awards, myself and 39 other people were awarded out of 2,500 applicants, which I found out yesterday, actually, that's how many people applied and were in it, which makes it sound even more impressive now, because I was like, oh yeah, 40 people under 40. But now I know there was actually quite a few people that entered this and didn't get a chance at it. The people that were there came from a trial or a tribulation or a challenge in life, or they came from nothing and created something. But everything was led by passion, purpose, and authenticity. And every single person in that room had a story, and it was dark and it was sad, but they turned that shit around. They didn't play the victim card. And I could easily say on this podcast, you know, I am a person that has gone through challenges. I am a person that is a victim of rape. I survived that challenge. I didn't play the victim card and come out of a domestic violence relationship with an ex-partner and go and neck myself. I think it takes a lot of strength and resilience in people that go through challenges to stop, think, find a friend, pick up the phone, ask for help when you need it, and just reflect on that experience and not let that experience define who you are. Because you still have your life, you still have your purpose in life, you still have what you want to do for yourself. Don't let that person that assaulted you take that moment away. So it's important, I think, for people to realize that you can have a challenge in life, but those challenges shouldn't be what defines you for the rest of your life. They are moments you should springboard from. And for me, the challenge of identity, the challenge of sexuality, the challenge of trusting the wrong people, and having those negative experiences, but learning from them so you don't repeat the same problem again. Or let those negative people back into your life. Learning from these challenges results in success. And that's my story, I guess, going from someone challenged by faith to someone successful in business, it didn't just land in my lap. It wasn't just, oh yeah, I had some money, started a company, and now I'm making a lot of money without disclosing it because I'm not going to. But I'm in a very comfortable and successful position today, in a fabulous relationship with a partner who, is just, I'm blessed to have a partner like him in my life. But words can't describe how happy I am about the relationship. I'm very happy in a relationship, but it's interesting when people just assume that success just happens for certain people. It doesn't. It happens for people that stop, think, reflect, and learn from the things that fuck up for us in life. And those challenges lead to success. That's the short version. But you really have to reflect on yourself and who you want to be and learn along the way. Life is hard and sometimes it's shit, but you have to persevere. And that's the strongest message I can put through, is that my success didn't come from luck. It really did come from perseverance, strength, interest, intrigue, and authenticity, knowing who I wanted to be at the end of the road. And I'm still got shit to go. I'm still finishing off my law degree. I'm still changing what I'm doing in my business. That shit changes on the daily. But what I do for my clients and what I do for the businesses in the industries I work with is very much stays the same. It's helping them find their purpose, finding their profit, and helping them build their businesses and making a positive difference in the industries that they're part of. That's my contribution, and I guess my purpose in the world really is now to help people and inspire people to do that for themselves and not feel like, oh, I've gone through some shit and then, that's the end for me. It's like, no, it's not the end. You're still breathing, you've still got a pulse, you're still alive, you can still see the world around you. Make the most of it, and see where life takes you.
The final question I'll ask you for someone that's listening to this interview based on your journey and experience, what tips or advice would you give them to overcome obstacles, accomplish their goals, and rise to the challenge?
Rising to the challenge comes from knowing who you are. I can't stress it enough. I've probably overemphasized it and overexplained it in different analogies on this interview, but I want the message to get through that you cannot succeed in life unless you know who you are and who you want to be. And you can't succeed or rise to the challenge if you're copying and pasting every bastard out there on the planet. No one wants to see the same shit. They want to see something unique. They want to know your purpose. And connecting your purpose and your why to who you are and what you do is what people find interesting about you. I could have easily gone to the 40 Under 40 Awards night and said, hi, I have a marketing agency and I work in PR and we're really successful, and leave out my story as to who I was. And people will be like, oh, it's another marketing agency. Clap, clap. Good for him. But it's boring because it's like, yeah, well, there's plenty of those. But your origin story is really important. And obstacles in life, like I said earlier, should not be a reason for you to stop doing something. I've been met with heaps of challenges. I've had clients breach their contract. I've had people in the adult industry spread nasty rumors about me out of misunderstanding or Chinese whispers on Twitter. And I've had to navigate that. I could let that shit destroy my career, or I could pay that shit no mind, move on, be aware of it, and continue doing what I'm doing. Because actions speak louder than words. And you can put whatever you want on the internet, but that shit don't fuck me up. Because all that does to you is make you look like an idiot. Because the more things you succeed in your life and your business and your career drowns out all the shit that all the people that are trying to drag you down online or over the phone or to your colleagues at work, that shit don't stand in reality. Because what stands in reality is what you know about yourself, how you accept yourself, where you position yourself in the world, and how you want to be viewed as a person, not the views and opinions of others. That's the biggest thing that I've learned in my life, is to be myself. And if people don't fucking like who I am, well, I'm sorry, that's your problem, not mine. And if you can stand true in who you are and know that what you're doing is positive, adding value, making great movements in your life, your career, and the world around you, then what better legacy could you leave behind as an individual? that you contribute in a positive way to life around you and made a success story for yourself that actually was doing something good in the world. And those things alone, and knowing who you are, and not letting naysayers get in your way or people challenging you on things that they don't understand, navigating that and just being you is sometimes actually all you need to do. Just be you. Be you, be happy in you, and do what you're passionate about. Don't just go online and do an online course and go, oh, yeah, I'll do this because it seems to make money. Because if you hate what you do, you're not going to be good at it. You have to love what you do. But knowing who you are, being passionate about what you're doing, and not letting any motherfucker get in your way is the three things, the cornerstones of rising to the challenge. It's literally you fly your own flag. And if you fly your own flag and you be your most authentic self, the right people come into your life. It's something that I thought, oh, it's so wishy-washy, you know, I'll never meet Mr. Right, or I'll never have a job that I love. But I have a job that I love because it's a job that I'm passionate about. I have a relationship in my life now that is void of all the toxic shit I had in previous relationships. And that's because I know who I am. I'm not trying to change myself to satisfy somebody else. I have a partner that loves me for me because I am me. I am my most authentic self. So when we try and change ourselves to suit other people, it's when we try and do what we think we have to do, not do what we want to do as a person. That's when we fuck up. That's when we fail in life and we struggle and we have those negative experiences because it's teaching us something. So it's being receptive and open to learn, being yourself, and just enjoy the ride, really. Don't let anything take you off course just because someone says, oh, I don't like what you're doing. If you love what you're doing, you know it's adding value, you know it's a good thing. Stick to it, because it took me 10 years in business and escorting and everything to get to where I am today. It wasn't overnight. There's a lot of shit that happened in my career. And if you jump on my website, or if you jump on podcasts, or if you Google me, I talk about quite a lot of it in a lot of detail. But those challenges are things that I overcome, and they're things that you learn from, and you adapt and grow. And just continue to grow and be yourself is the biggest, most important thing is your authenticity. Know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, get off your ass, go experience the world and learn who that is. Don't be afraid to learn who you are, because sometimes you need to step outside your comfort zone to work out who you are. And I did that from being a youth minister to a drag queen to a sex worker to now 40 under 40 top 100 entrepreneur. But you know, if you asked me 12, 13 years ago that this is where I would be, it's definitely not what I would have said. I said I was going to be a hotel manager. That definitely changed, didn't it? So, or a teacher. I teach people in a very different way these days to what I thought. So it's very much about authenticity. And not being afraid to be you, and not being afraid to do what you love. And if people are in your way that are telling you, I don't like it, get rid of them. Sounds brash, sounds rough, but sometimes you've got to cut the shit out of your life that's not adding value or positively supporting you, because when you do that, you will have other people come into your life that will be there championing you and helping you rise to the challenge just as much as you want to rise to the challenge yourself. So hopefully that inspires people to live their most authentic lives and not be afraid to do things that are different, because you never know where it might lead you.
Well, Braden, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your rise to the challenge. You're inspiring so many people, and we are excited to see what the future looks like for you.
No worries. Thanks for having me on the show, Alex. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and sorry it went so long. like to give long answers, but thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy.
Tune in next time to hear my next guest talk about their rise to the challenge. Remember to follow, subscribe on all major audio platforms, and make sure to subscribe to her YouTube channel to get a full length episode in video format. What path do you take to accomplish your goals? You decide.